The kids dig in with more gusto than yesterday. For all they know, this mess with the police is all over.
It is raining now, but it will stop this afternoon, Enzo comments. Nico, we should practice baseball again when I get back from work.
Do you think they would let me on a little league team again next year? Nico asks around a mouthful of pancakes. I'm not sure about the rules, but after punching a kid in the gut, Nico might be banned for life.
I am not sure, Enzo says, but maybe over the summer we practice soccer instead. We get you just as good as at baseball, okay?
Nico nods. Okay. It's this perfect, calm family moment that I dreamed of when I first saw this house. The four of us sitting around the breakfast table in the kitchen, eating pancakes. If I could take a family photo, it would be at this very moment. And then, the doorbell rings, spoiling everything.
I get it.
Enzo leaps out of his seat so quickly, I'm worried he already knows who is at the door.
We'll be right back.
Of course, I follow him. Whatever is going on, I want to know what it is. At this point, I'm fairly sure nothing good is waiting on the other side of that door. When I get out to the foyer, Enzo has already opened the front door. Cecilia is standing there, her pantsuit drenched, her blonde hair plastered to her head from the rain. If she were wearing any makeup, it would be running down her face.
Come in, Enzo tells her. You are soaked.
Even though Cecilia is dripping wet, she barely seems to notice as she pushes past us into the foyer.
I'm glad I got here in time. We need to talk.
I look over at the kitchen, making sure the kids aren't standing at the entrance, listening in. I have a feeling whatever Cecilia has to say, I don't want the kids to hear it. Do you want to sit down? I ask her. I can get you a towel or... The police are on their way here to arrest you, Enzo. Cecilia interrupts me. Even though she warned me yesterday, this revelation knocks the wind out of me. Enzo looks equally shaken. The police gave me a heads up this morning as a courtesy. She pushes a few strands of wet hair from her face. They are obtaining a warrant for your arrest, and I would expect they will be here shortly. I got here as fast as I could so we could talk before it happens.
Why? He cries. What do they have? They have nothing.
Benito had some information for me, she says. We talked while I was driving here. As I told you yesterday, they did find something when they were here. They found what they believe is the murder weapon.
Is ridiculous, Enzo rants. Murder weapon? What, one of our kitchen knives?
No, a pocket knife, she says. It had your initials on it, EA. They found it stuffed in a drawer. I turn my head to look at my husband. I know that knife, the one his father gave him. He always carries it around. And, she adds, it looked like it had been wiped clean, but there were still traces of blood on it. They did a rush DNA analysis that came back this morning, with a match for Jonathan Lowell. Enzo's mouth falls open. He slumps against the wall, looking like his legs are about to give out. Of all the evidence they had against him, this is by far the most damning. But he must have a reason. There must be a reason why his knife has Jonathan's blood on it. I need to hear his explanation. I need to hear it now.
Enzo, I whisper.
He blinks a few times. I thought I wiped it all off.
What?
He stands up straight and takes a shaky breath.
I'm so sorry, Mealy, he says. I was not honest with you. I am the one who killed Jonathan.
59.
I am the one who killed Jonathan.
I will hear my husband saying those words in my head until the day I die. Until this moment, Cecilia has seemed utterly confident and in control of the situation. But this confession has shaken her.
Enzo, are you saying... I am so sorry, he says quietly. I did a terrible thing. I am sorry that I lied about it, but now I will make it right. I will confess.
What are you talking about? I am nearly shrieking, loud enough for the kids to hear, but I can't help myself. Why would you do that?
He drops his eyes. I am so sorry. I did it for us, for the insurance money. We were so broke and...
Cecilia is at a loss for words, and for that matter, so am I. I have so many questions. If he did this for the insurance money, does that mean Suzette was involved? Will she be arrested too? I can't even think of where to start, but then the doorbell rings, and I realize that I don't have time to ask even one question. Cecilia snaps back to attention. That's the police, she says. Enzo's face fills with panic.
Mealy, can you please bring the children upstairs? I do not want them to see.
The doorbell rings again, followed by pounding on the door. I don't want the kids to see either, but it doesn't seem like I have much time.
Oh, Enzo, what were you thinking?
I nearly trip over my feet on the way to the kitchen, where the kids are still eating their pancakes. God, I wish I could let them finish those pancakes. But there's no time. You guys, I say, I need you both to go to your rooms and shut the doors. Now. There was a time when a request like that would have been met with whining and objections. But right now, they get it. They abandon their plates and run upstairs. Two doors slam in succession. When I return, Enzo and Cecilia still have not opened the door. They're waiting for me to give the all clear. Enzo looks like he's going to be sick, but he squares himself and opens the front door. It's no surprise that Detective Willard is standing there, that same grim expression on his face that I have come to despise.
Enzo Accardi, he says, you are under arrest for the murder of Jonathan Lowell.
When the detective snaps the cuffs on my husband's wrists, I am so glad the kids are upstairs so they don't witness this. I know how it feels to have handcuffs on your wrists. I remember the way the metal bites into your skin, and when you walk, you almost feel off balance. I know what it feels like to be taken away by the police in handcuffs. I see that pain in Enzo's eyes. And he has a lot more handcuffs in his future. A lifetime.
I love you, Mealy,
Enzo calls out to me just as they are taking him away. He doesn't make excuses. He doesn't pretend he's innocent anymore. All he has to say for himself are those four words. Enzo! Cecilia calls after him, sticking her head out into the rain. Do not say one word to them without me there. Do you hear me? Not one word. I'm going to meet you there. I watch the detective lead my husband to the police car. They shove him in the back seat, and something inside me just breaks. I'm never going to come home to my husband again. The next time I see him, he will be in custody. He will almost certainly spend the rest of his life behind bars. Cecilia closes our front door and leans against it, shaking her head. She brushes a strand of wet hair out of her eyes. I can't believe that just happened. I am stunned. Yeah, I manage. We're missing something. She stares intently out the window at the police car carrying my husband away from us, as if that might somehow hold the clue. He's not telling us everything. He wouldn't kill someone for money. I don't believe that for one second. He had another reason. Maybe. Except she doesn't know how badly we wanted this house. Even at 10% below asking, it wasn't in our price range, but we bought it anyway. We celebrated when our mortgage got approved, but now I wish the bank had rejected us. We could have kept looking. We could have found something just as good where we weren't constantly struggling to pay our bills. Do not panic, Millie, she says to me. I will handle this. I shoot her a look. My husband just confessed to murder, Cecilia. It's hard to gauge what the worst part of this is. It's awful in every way imaginable. But the hardest part is imagining Enzo doing that to Jonathan. It's not like Jonathan was shot from across the room. Enzo walked right up to him with his pocket knife and slashed his throat from ear to ear. What kind of person does that? But there's a lot Enzo has done in his life that I would not have believed. I couldn't have imagined my husband breaking fingers for a mobster. But it turns out that's part of his history, too. He's apparently very much the sort of man who could cut another man's throat. After all, he did it. He confessed. A door slams upstairs. One of the kids must have come out of their room to witness their father being taken away by the police. Now I have to deal with that. I have to tell both of them what happened. I better get over to the police station, Cecilia says. Will you be all right, Millie? Absolutely not. But there's nothing she can do for me right now. Go to the station. She nods. Remember, this is not over. I will help him. Thank you, I say. Although, what can she really do for us at this point? It wasn't self-defense. It was either first-degree or second-degree murder. Either way, he's lost his freedom for good. Cecilia hugs me goodbye, and she promises to stay in touch with any updates. Once she's gone, though, and the house is silent once again, I take in the reality of my situation. Enzo is gone. And now I have to tell the kids. As I walk up the creaky stairs to the second floor of our house, it hits me that there is no way we will be able to afford the mortgage payments anymore. The first thing we are going to have to do is put this house back on the market. I don't know where we will be able to afford to live on just my income. I start for Nico's room first, because he has been the more troubled of my two children. But then I hear the sobs coming from Ada's room. That girl always takes everything so hard, and in this situation, I can't blame her. I knock on the door, and when she doesn't answer, I come in anyway. Ada is lying on her bed, sobbing into her pillow, her narrow shoulders shaking violently. Actually, her whole body is shaking. I saw somebody have a seizure at the hospital last year, and this looks not entirely dissimilar to that. Ada has always been a daddy's girl, and it's going to destroy her world to find out what he did. Just watching her cry makes the tears I've been holding back spring to my eyes. Enzo, how could you do this to us? How could you? Ada, I sit on the edge of her bed and stroke her soft black hair. Ada, honey, I told you not to come down. She says something into her pillow that I can't quite make out. It's okay. I stroke her hair again. It's going to be okay. I don't know who I am trying to convince. If I'm trying to convince her, it's not working. And I'm not convincing myself either. I should just shut up. Ada shifts on the bed, turning to look at me with her puffy, bloodshot eyes.
They think Dad killed Mr. Lowell.
My instinct is to lie, but what is the point? Yes, they do. Tears stream down her cheeks.
But he didn't.
This next part is going to be hard for her, but she's going to hear it sooner or later. Better she hears it from me than reads it online or hears it from a friend. Ada, honey, he confessed, I tell her. He admitted to them that he killed Mr. Lowell.
He didn't, though,
she cries.
I know he didn't.
I try to put my hand on her shoulder, but she shrugs me away. How do you know?
Because,
my daughter says,
I was the one who killed him.
Part 3. 60. Ada. My name is Ada Accardi, and I am 11 years old. I have black hair and eyes that are actually brown, except some people say they look black as well. I have one brother named Nicolas, and he is 9 years old. I speak two languages fluently, English and Italian. My favorite food is macaroni and cheese, especially the way my mom makes it. My favorite book is Daughters of Eve by Lois Duncan. My favorite flavor of ice cream is cookie dough. Also, I killed my next-door neighbor, Jonathan Lowell. One more thing. I'm not sorry. How to Kill Your Creepy Next-Door Neighbor, a guide by Ada Accardi, grade 5. Step 1. Leave behind your home and everything you love. Tomorrow, we are moving. Mom and Dad are really excited about this, especially Dad. He keeps talking about how we are going to live in this great new house and we are going to love it. They act like they are doing this wonderful thing for us. Except, I don't want to move. I like it in the Bronx. All my friends are here. I even like this apartment that they say is too small. But when you are 11 years old, you don't have a choice. If your mom and dad tell you that you need to move, you have to move. Anyway, that's why I can't sleep. I've been lying awake in bed for the last hour, staring up at the ceiling. I like my ceiling. It has a lot of cracks in the paint, but the cracks look familiar. Like, there's this crack right in the center that looks just like a face. I named it Constance. I'm going to miss Constance when we leave. Nico, I whisper into the darkness. One thing my parents say is bad about our home is that Nico and I have to share a room. And because he's a boy and I'm a girl, we shouldn't have to share. Except Dad hung a curtain in the middle of the room, so it's fine. I don't mind sharing with Nico. I like knowing that when I go to sleep, he is in the room with me on the other side of the curtain. Yeah? Nico whispers back. He's awake. Good. I can't sleep.
Me either.
I wish we didn't have to move. Nico's mattress makes that loud squeaking noise that it always does when he rolls over.
I know. It's not fair.
Somehow, it makes me feel better that Nico also doesn't want to leave. Because Mom and Dad are so excited. You would think we are moving to Disneyland. But it's not as bad for him as it is for me. Nico has always made friends more easily than me. Everyone likes Nico right away. But I have had the same two best friends, Inara and Trinity, since I was in kindergarten. Also, I am only 3 months away from graduating from elementary school, and I am going to miss my graduation. Instead, I'm going to graduate with a bunch of kids I don't even know.
Maybe it will be awful, Nico says, and Mom and Dad will want to move back.
Probably not. I think this new house was really expensive.
Right. They said they can't even hardly afford the garage.
You mean the mortgage?
Is that different?
I don't understand what a mortgage is, but I know it's not the same as a garage. Like, I'm pretty sure. We are stuck living in this new house until we go to college. He's quiet on the other side of the curtain.
Well, maybe it won't be so bad. Maybe we'll get to like it.
I can't imagine that. I can't imagine making all new friends and getting used to a big, scary house. Nico, I say.
Uh-huh.
Can I pull the curtains open? The curtains separating the two sides of the room are really meant for me. When Dad put them up, Mom told me that we were doing it because you are a young lady now and you need your privacy. But I always sort of want to open the curtains at night.
Okay,
Nico says agreeably. I climb out of bed and pull the curtains back. Nico has his Super Mario Bros. Bedspread pulled up to his neck, and his black hair is messy. He waves to me, and I wave back. I remember the day Mom and Dad brought Nico home from the hospital. Mom says I can't possibly remember that because I was only 2 years old and my brain couldn't make memories yet. But I swear I remember it. Mom brought him into the house in his little baby carrying case, and he was just so tiny. I couldn't believe how tiny he was, even smaller than my dolls. I asked if I could hold him, and Mom said I could if I was very careful. So I sat down on the couch, and Mom laid him down on my lap. She told me I had to support his head, so I did. He looked really happy being held, although he mostly looked like an old man. And then I put my finger in his little tiny mouth, and he sucked on it. And I said to him, "I love you, Nico. I will miss my brother being my roommate." 61. Today is moving day. Dad got a big truck, and he's mostly moving everything with a couple of his friends that he works with. Mom keeps yelling that he's going to hurt his back and telling him to be careful, and he says he will, but he never gets hurt, so I don't know why she's so worried. I can tell he thinks it's silly too, but he usually gives in when she gets upset like that. My mom is a really good mom. She's like the kind of mom where if you forgot you were supposed to bring in a tray of Rice Krispie Squares for school tomorrow and it's already almost bedtime, she will go out and get the Rice Krispies and marshmallows and she'll make it for you and make sure they're packed and ready for school the next day. This happened to Nico recently, so I know it's true. She's just kind of your average good mom who loves us and takes care of us. But Dad is different. My dad can basically do anything. Like, Mom could go out and get stuff to make Rice Krispie Squares and have them ready for school tomorrow. But if I said to Dad that I needed Rice Krispie Squares that came from, like, I don't know, China, then he would have them for me. I don't know how, but he would get them by the time I needed them for school the next day. Also, he drives this big truck, and he used to let me ride in front with him. But then Mom found out and got mad. So now he doesn't let me, because he says she is really smart, and if she says it's not safe, I can't do it. My room in the new house is big. It is about twice the size of the room that Nico and I used to share. Dad told me that I get to pick my room first because I am the oldest, so I picked the one on the corner. It has lots of windows that I can look out while I read. Except, right in the middle of unpacking books in my new room, I start to cry. I cry too much. Everybody says that about me. I can't help it, though. When I'm sad, I cry. What I don't understand is why everybody else doesn't cry more often. Even Nico hardly ever cries anymore. Dad passes by my bedroom while I am sitting on the bed crying. He immediately drops the box he is holding and comes to sit next to me. What is wrong, Piccolina? Why are you sad? I raise my eyes to look at him. I am almost as tall as Mom, but Dad is much taller than both of us. When he comes to pick me up from school, the other girls at school say that he is very handsome. Also, Inara's mom has a crush on him, but I don't think of him that way. I want to go back home, I say. He frowns, but this is home now, and much better home. I hate it. Ada, you do not mean that. He looks so disappointed that I don't tell him that I do mean it. If I could snap my fingers and be back home in our tiny little apartment again, I would do it in a second. I will tell you what, he says. You give our new house a chance. And if in 1 year, if you still hate, then we move back. No, we won't. We will. I make you a promise. Mom won't let us do that. He winks at me and says in Italian, So, we do it anyway. I don't believe him, but it makes me feel better. Plus, when I think about it, he is probably right. Everything will be different in a year. Maybe I really will love it here by then. 62. Step 2. Try to fit in. Badly. I've never been the new kid before. I always felt bad for the new kids standing in front of the classroom, having to tell us all about themselves. And now, it's me. I'm standing up in front of a room full of fifth graders wearing the itchy, uncomfortable pink dress my mom put out for me. There was a beautiful white floaty dress in the department store that I wanted to buy for my first day of school. But for some reason, my mom never, ever lets me wear white. So that's how we ended up with this one. And now, I don't know what to say. Go on, Ada, my teacher, Mrs. Ratner, says to me. Tell everyone a little about yourself. I don't like Mrs. Ratner. My old teacher, Ms. Marcus, was young and wore these cute purple glasses all the time, and she used to bring candy for us every Thursday. Mrs. Ratner is about 1 million years old, and I think her smile muscles might be too old to work anymore. My name is Ada, I say, and I'm from New York City. I look over at Mrs. Ratner, checking if this might be enough. It isn't. I like to read, I say, and I used to take ballet lessons. I haven't taken ballet lessons since I was 9 years old, but I'm hoping that might be enough. It's not. My favorite subject is English, I go on, and my dad is Italian, so I speak Italian. Does anyone have any questions for Ada? Mrs. Ratner addresses the class. A kid in the class raises his hand.
If your dad is an alien, is he green?
He's not an alien. He's Italian.
You said alien.
I don't know what to say to that. Then the second question comes.
If you're Italian, how come your favorite subject is English?
My dad is Italian, I explain. I'm from here. No, you're not, another kid says. You just moved here, so how can you be from here? I mean, I say, I'm from New York, which is here.
This is not New York City,
the first kid says. But it's New York State.
So?
Mrs. Ratner lets the other kids ask me questions for a few more minutes. They ask me some questions that are okay, like, what is my favorite movie or my favorite TV show? But they ask me a lot of other questions that are weird, like, why am I wearing socks with a dress? And that same kid who asked if my dad was an alien asks me if I believe in aliens and if I've ever seen one. When I go back to my seat, the boy next to me is staring at me. It's pretty annoying, and I finally say to him, "What is it?" And then he says,
"If you're an alien, you are the prettiest alien I have ever seen."
I don't even know what to say to that, but then Mrs. Ratner shushes us, so I don't have to think of what to say back. When it's time for lunch, the boy who is sitting next to me follows me to the cafeteria. Well, I'm pretty much following everyone else since I don't know where to go, but I feel like he is behind me the whole time. And then, when I get into the line, he is right in line behind me.
"Hi, Ada,"
he says.
"I'm Gabe."
"Hi," I say back. When I was in kindergarten or first grade, all the kids in our class were about the same size. But in fifth grade, some kids are a lot bigger than others. Like, there are kids that only go up to my shoulder. And then there are other kids like Gabe who are super tall and kind of tower over me.
"So, how do you like the school so far?"
he asks me.
I don't like it at all, but I can't say that. So I just shrug.
It's fine.
"How come you moved here?"
"My parents think it's a good place for kids to grow up or something."
"Oh, it's not."
Gabe's eyes bug out, and for a moment, he reminds me a little bit of the praying mantis that Nico wants to get.
"Did you know that this kid disappeared a few years ago? Like, one day he was here, and one day he wasn't."
I don't know what he is talking about. If this town wasn't safe, my parents wouldn't have moved us here. From our school?
"No, he lived a few towns away, but we all went to the same camp together."
Gabe looks way too excited to talk about this missing kid.
"He was really good at archery, but I was a better swimmer. His name was Braden Lundy, and like I said, one day, he just never came home from school, and nobody ever figured out what happened to him.
They say it's usually someone in the family. I heard my mom saying that once to my dad when they were watching the news and thought I couldn't hear them.
No, it wasn't,
Gabe insists.
Braden's parents were working with the police and trying so hard to find him, but they never did.
He gives me an ominous look.
He's probably dead now.
Maybe he ran away.
He was only 8 years old. Where would he even go?
The idea of an 8-year-old disappearing makes goosebumps pop up all over my arms. I have to make sure to wait with Nico for the bus. If we're together, nothing can happen.
If you want,
Gabe says,
I can walk you home so nothing happens to you.
I take the bus. And even if I didn't, I do not want to hang out with Gabe. As much as I want to make some friends, he's creepy. It's something about his thin, curly hair. Also, he smells bad. He needs to take a shower. I take one every night because Mom says it's important to smell good.
Well, he says, maybe you can come over to my house after school today.
I'm not allowed, I say. I'm supposed to come right home after school.
Maybe another day?
He asks hopefully. Maybe. I don't want to hang out with Gabe any day, but I'm hoping he will just leave me alone if I say that. But he doesn't leave me alone. He talks to me the entire time we are waiting in the line for our food, and then he follows me to my table. I don't really want to sit with him, but I guess it's better than sitting alone. 63.
Nico and I ride the bus home from school together. It's not surprising that he made a bunch of new friends today, but he still sits next to me.
How was school? I ask him.
Pretty good, he says. A lot of kids like to play baseball.
I wish I was good at sports like Nico. I'm good at swimming because Dad taught me, but it's not a group activity. I don't even think there's a swim team for kids my age. The other thing I like to do is read, and that's not a group activity either.
Some of the kids are going to the park this weekend to play baseball, he says. Maybe Mom will let me go.
Just be careful, I say. Did you know that there was this kid named Braden Lundy who disappeared a few years ago? He was about your age, too. Nobody even knows what happened to him.
So?
So, something happened to him. Maybe somebody killed him.
Jeez, Ada.
Nico rolls his eyes.
You worry more than Mom.
He might be right. I don't know why I worry about things so much. I wish I could turn off my worrying.
If you're worried,
Nico says,
you can come and watch.
I might do that, but really, I would rather be spending time with kids my own age. I didn't make any friends today. Well, except for Gabe, and I really, really don't want to spend any time with him outside of school. It's bad enough I have to see him at school. Did you sleep better having your own room last night? I ask Nico. He thinks about it for a minute and shakes his head.
No, I was scared. I missed you.
I'm glad he said that. I had so much trouble sleeping last night all alone in my room. I miss you too.
Maybe we can have a sleepover sometime,
he suggests.
I can bring a sleeping bag and sleep on the floor in your room.
Or I can sleep in your room.
We can take turns,
he says happily. The bus arrives on Locust Street, which is the dead-end street where we live. Nico and I climb out, along with that kid Spencer who lives across the way. Spencer's mom is already waiting for him and immediately takes him home. But our mom is waiting in the house. I've got the keys to the house in my bag, and Mom says if she's not home from work yet when we get home, I'm in charge until she gets back. As we pass the house next door to ours, I notice somebody at the window. It must be our neighbor. It's a man about the same age as Dad. And when he sees us, he waves. Nico waves back, and so do I. But I feel weird about it. I don't know why that man is standing at the window watching the school bus arrive. It's just a strange thing to do.
64. Step 3. Learn to live in your new home. Nico is acting weird. He's been going over to the Lowells' house after school because he broke their window playing baseball in the backyard, so he has to work it off doing chores. Anyway, it seems like he goes there every day, and then he doesn't get home until just before Mom gets back. I asked him what kind of chores they have him doing, and he said, just cleaning. But then, when I asked him what he was cleaning, he got quiet about it. Whatever they're making him do, it's making him grumpy. They don't even have an animal to clean up after. Are they making him take out the garbage? Wash dishes? Are they making him push a boulder up a hill and as soon as he gets to the top, the boulder rolls back down to the bottom again? If this were back in the old days, when we shared a room, I would have just waited until bedtime and then asked him about it. But now, Nico shuts himself in his room at night and doesn't talk to me much. Tonight, during dinner, he was hardly eating at all. Mom made mashed potatoes with lots of butter and salt, just the way he likes it. But he just kept making it into a big pile and then sculpting it into different things. So after dinner is over, I go to his room. I knock on the door, which still feels weird after sharing a room for so long. "I'm busy," he calls out. "It's Ada," I call through the door. "Still busy." Then I try the doorknob and it's locked. Why does a 9-year-old even have a lock on their door? It doesn't feel like that's safe. Oh no, I really do sound like Mom. Great, I take after the boring parent. Just my luck. I decide the best thing to do is ask him about it while we're walking to the bus stop the next morning. The few minutes when we walk to the stop and then later back home are the only times of the day when the two of us are alone together. But then we get to the stop, and mean Mrs. Archer is standing there glowering at the two of us, especially Nico. But lately, Nico hasn't even been waiting for me to walk to the bus stop. He just dashes out the door in the morning and barely looks at me while we wait for the bus to arrive. So this morning, I wake up extra early to make sure he doesn't leave before I do. When I get downstairs, there's no sign of Nico. I figure I have just enough time for a quick bowl of cereal for breakfast, although when I get in the kitchen, Martha is cleaning, and I don't want to get in her way. It's so weird having a woman who comes to our house to clean. Back in the Bronx, only our rich friends had cleaning people, and I'm pretty sure we're not rich.
"Do you want breakfast?"
Martha asks me. I nod. "Can you pass me the box of cornflakes?" Martha's eyes widen.
"Cornflakes for breakfast?"
I don't understand why she looks so horrified by that. What's wrong with having cereal for breakfast? I mean, isn't that what cereal is for? But then again, Martha is strange.
She hardly talks at all. She keeps her hair back in a bun so tight that it looks painful. And also, she's always staring at my mom. Like, always. I have no idea why.
I can make you an omelet and sausage,
she tells me.
That's a proper breakfast.
Before I can tell her, no, that I don't have time, she opens the fridge and reaches for the carton of eggs. When she's reaching, the sleeve of her shirt rides up, and I notice she's got a ring of dark purple bruises around her wrist, like she was wearing a bracelet that was much too tight. Did you hurt yourself? I ask her. She freezes, the carton of eggs clutched in her hands. Her gaze drops to her wrist, and she tugs at her sleeve to cover the bruises.
No.
Then why do you have bruises? I ask, even though I know it's none of my business. She blinks a few times.
I just...
She seems so upset all of a sudden. I wonder if Martha is in some kind of trouble, and maybe I should try to help her. But what can I do? I'm only 11 years old. I can't even solve my own problems. Speaking of my own problems, while I'm trying to figure out what to say to Martha, I hear the front door slam. Nico, shoot! I knew I shouldn't have tried to get stupid breakfast. Now he'll be at the bus stop before we even have a second to talk. I have to go, I tell Martha. And she looks so relieved that I'm glad I didn't say anything else. It's not like she'd want to tell her problems to some kid anyway. 65. Today, Dad is picking me up at school to take me out for ice cream. He used to do this back at our old apartment. Nico eats up a lot of attention, so Dad said we should get to hang out just the two of us. I was worried that he wouldn't want to do it anymore after we moved, especially because he's building up his business in our new town. But then yesterday, he told me he was picking me up tomorrow in his truck, and now I'm waiting for him outside the school. I've never been picked up before, only taken the school bus, so I'm not entirely sure where to wait. I end up behind the school, because there is a place for cars to pull over there. But then everybody leaves, and it gets real quiet. And I can't help but start thinking about that kid, Braden Lundy, the one who disappeared. The thought of that really scares me. Because when you disappear, what happens to you? I mean, it's not like he just vanished off the face of the earth. He didn't disintegrate. Somebody took him.
Ada?
At first, I am grateful to hear a kid's voice from behind me. Until I turn around and realize it's Gabe, pretty much the last person I want to see. Ever since my first day of school a few weeks ago, Gabe won't leave me alone. I found some girls to sit with during lunch, and he knows better than to try to join us, but he always gets in line behind me in the cafeteria, and then he follows me to recess. I hardly ever talk to him, so I don't understand why he keeps bugging me.
What are you doing here?
He asks me.
I thought you'd take the school bus.
I'm getting picked up, I say. Except, I don't know where my dad is. And now that I'm looking around, I realize there's no way to get onto this street from the main road. It's all blocked off, so there's no way Dad can find me here. I've got to walk around and see if I can find him, and then tell him I need a cell phone, because I really do.
Listen, Ada, Gabe says. I wanted to ask you a question.
I don't want him to ask me a question. Sorry, I need to find my dad.
Right, but I just have to ask you this.
Gabe is really bad at taking no for an answer. It's annoying.
Do you think think you might want to go on a date with me sometime?
I'm not allowed to date. That's not an official rule, but I have a feeling that it would be if I asked. But I'm not going to ask, because I don't want to go out on a date with Gabe or anybody.
Well, would it be okay if I held your hand?
I don't even have a chance to say no this time before Gabe reaches out to grab my hand. His is sweaty and hot. It's pretty gross to touch. I pull away, but instead of backing off, he grabs my wrist instead. I don't want to hold hands, I say, even though he's not holding my hand anymore. He's grabbing my wrist. Gabe still isn't getting it. His long fingers encircle my wrist as he tightens his grip.
Just for like 2 minutes, Ada, please?
You're hurting me, I say through my teeth.
No, I'm not,
he insists. I try to wrench my hand away, but he's holding on too tightly. I start thinking about something my mom told me, about how boys are really sensitive between their legs, and if you kick them there, they will leave you alone. But before I have a chance to test that out, we get interrupted by a string of angry Italian words, and then my dad's voice booming out,
"What do you think you are doing to my daughter?"
Gabe drops my wrist instantly. Dad is running over to us, and he looks about as mad as I have ever seen him. There's a big, scary vein standing out in his neck, and his right hand is a fist. He looks like he wants to pick up Gabe and break him in half, and I'm pretty sure he could if he wanted to. I mean, my dad is really strong.
I'm sorry,
Gabe sputters.
No.
Dad waves his hand at me.
You say sorry to her.
Gabe is just about to pee in his pants.
I'm sorry, Ada. I'm really sorry.
Dad seems like he's barely keeping himself from beating Gabe into a bloody pulp. He gets real close to him, and his dark eyes look terrifying. Mine are the same color, but they never look scary like his can sometimes.
If you ever touch my daughter again,
Dad hisses at him.
You will understand what sorry really means. You understand me. Yes,
Gabe cries.
I mean, no, I mean.
He looks between the two of us, and then, without another word, he runs away as fast as he can. Dad looks really upset. I don't know if I've ever seen him quite so angry before. At first, he's breathing hard, but then he calms down and gets this kind of sad expression on his face.
Come on, Ada, he tells me. We need to talk. In the truck.
Is he mad at me? I didn't do anything wrong, did I? I didn't want to hold Gabe's hand, but maybe he couldn't tell that I was trying to get away, except he doesn't really seem angry at me. He just seems upset, like in general. We have to walk all the way back to his truck, which he parked in the school lot. He must have parked and then walked around looking for me. He tells me to get inside, and when I start to get in the back, he tells me to get in the front. But then, when we are in the car, he doesn't start the engine. He just sits in the driver's seat, not saying anything. He's looking down at my wrist, where Gabe was holding on to me. The place where his fingers were has now turned an angry shade of red. I wonder if I will have a bruise. Ada, he says. That was scary. I nod. It's okay, though, because you were there.
That's the scary part,
he says. I was there, but next time, I might not be there. I will not always be there. I guess he's right, but at the same time,
It seems like he is always there. Every time I have ever needed him, he has been there. It seems impossible that there will be a time when I need my dad and he won't be around for me. Like, Gabe was bothering me, and there he was, coming out of nowhere to scare him off and save me.
I told my sister I would always be there,
he murmurs, almost to himself. But then... I am named after my dad's sister. Her name was Antonia, and she died before I was born. Dad sometimes talks about her and how much he loved her, but he's never said how she died. It must have been something bad, though, because she was so young.
If a boy is bothering you, he says, you ask him to stop. You be firm about it. Make sure he knows.
I nod solemnly. But there's a chance he might not stop. Dad's dark eyebrows come together, and he gets a deep crease between them. And if that happens... Dad is quiet for a second, thinking something over. Finally, he reaches into his pocket and pulls out that pocket knife he always carries around, the one that his dad gave him, which has his initials engraved on it.
My father gave me this when I was your age, he says. Now, I give it to you.
Dad, I cry, I can't carry around a knife with me. I'll get in trouble.
You do not get in trouble if nobody knows, he says.
I look down at the knife in his hands. Even though I shouldn't, I'm itching to pick it up. I've always liked that knife because it reminds me of my dad. I figured he would give it to Nico someday, but instead, he's giving it to me. What am I supposed to do with it? I ask him.
Nothing, he says. You carry it with you, but you never use it. Only if you have to.
But I stare down at the knife, still in his hand. The blade is retracted, but I bet it's sharp. You really think I could?
Only if you have to, Ada, he repeats.
He touches an area to the right of his belly button. You put the blade right in here, and then, he jerks his wrist.
You twist.
I stare up at him. Did you ever do that?
Me?
His eyebrows shoot up.
Oh, no. This is just, cautionary.
He holds the knife out to me again. This time, I take it from him. 66. Step 4. Start to suspect the terrible truth. It's Saturday afternoon, and I'm in the kitchen trying to decide if I want a snack before dinner when Nico slips in through the back door. I haven't seen him since